Good evening, everyone. Thanks very much for coming. I'm Naveed Mahmood, and I work with the Vidhi Center for Legal Policy, leading their work on crime and punishment. Thanks very much for joining us this evening as we begin our series on the working of the Indian Constitution in collaboration with the India International Center. As part of this collaboration, we are starting a series of conversations on the great cases in India, and we would want to discuss cases that have shaped the legal system of our country, that have shaped the way the Constitution of India operates on ground for each one of us on a daily basis. Before we begin today's discussion, maybe all of us can remember Mr. Fali Nariman, one of India's greatest lawyers and legal minds that we've known, who devoted all his life to protecting and upholding constitutional ideals. And I'm sure many of us here have been inspired by him, have been inspired by the work that he's done over the past many, many years, and learned how to read the law, interpret the law, understand and enforce the constitutional ideals and values of our country. And this event today, this discussion today, gives us an opportunity to honor his legacy. As part of our great series, great cases series, we, as I said, hope to discuss cases that have shaped our legal system and have shaped the way the Constitution interacts with the citizens of this country and really shapes our lives on a daily basis. And one of these cases is the Bilkis Bhano case. And this is a case that has traversed through the criminal justice system over the past 20 years. It has had its fair share of ups and downs, but I think in the end, it has really, it's what is the most remarkable part about this case is that it has really shaped and defined the meaning of the word justice for our criminal justice system. A case of multiple murders, a case of gang rape in the aftermath of the 2002 Gujarat violence. This case has gone from failing to be registered before the government and failing to be acknowledged to conviction of 11 accused persons and sentencing them to life imprisonment to granting a compensation of 50 lakh rupees to the victim Bilkis Bhano. It is truly one of the great cases that has shaped India's legal system and India's criminal justice system. But last year, and to all of our to our surprise, the 11 convicts who were sentenced to life imprisonment was released released by the government of Gujarat on remission on grounds of good behavior, and they had barely served 14 to 15 years of their life sentenced. And of course, the release was challenged before the court, and the Supreme Court, over the, I think a few weeks ago, directed cancellation of the release and directed that all the accused, all the convicts be sent back to prison. To discuss this case in more detail, we have with us Senior Advocate Shobha Gupta, who has been practicing before the Supreme Court and the Delhi High Court for over two decades now. She has founded the Free Legal Aid Group to provide free legal aid to juveniles and the forum We the Women of India to raise awareness for women's rights. She's been associated with the case for almost 20 years now and has played an instrumental role in ensuring that Bilkis gets the justice that she really deserves. I would now like to invite Ms. Gupta for her opening remarks and to share her experience of working on this case. And we will then follow it up with a brief discussion on the more recent order of the Supreme Court cancelling the remission that was granted to the 11 convicts. We'll then open up for audience questions. Thank you. Anywhere comfortable? You can sit.
So hi, hello everybody, good evening. To opening remarks is, I did my duty only, that's the opening remark, I believe. You can start shooting the questions. That's the only thing I have to say. As a professional, as a lawyer, a case came to me and I was duty bound to serve. So we can proceed with the question answers. Like, I believe this is This is much else, like if have something to be asked, opening remark is this enough, and then we can talk.
So I just to get a, you've been involved in the case since, I think, 2002, three. Since if you could just briefly.
Use your mic.
I think it's, am I audible now? Yeah. I'll have to move a little far. Yeah. So if you could briefly tell us how, there's been a lot of, we all know that how difficult was it to actually get that matter registered.
Oh, hi. I could see that they were sitting here.
To get the FIR registered. And it was only after, I think, the interventions through the NHRC and the Supreme Court that trial could actually start. So if you could briefly tell us how that really shaped up the case back in 2002.
So the real heroes are actually sitting somewhere else in the hall. You know, amongst you there. And they have served Bilkis more than me in the matter, and they don't want possibly to be recognized, I believe. But they are the real heroes. I have only played my bit as a lawyer. So how did it come to me? Gujarat riots took place, and we all were cognizant of the same as citizens in the country and who read newspapers and watch TVs. Those days, not like today when we most of us say we don't watch TVs. We were watching TVs. So we were cognizant of the same, and I was a lawyer who had, by that time, 7.5 years of practice and 5 years in Supreme Court. Even I was aware of the riots, the casualties, the barbarism which was taking place there, which had happened to people and lives destroyed. But honestly, not about Bilkis. I have to admit that I was just living in my own world, but yes, cognizant of the happenings in Gujarat. Then someday I was called upon by Justice A.S. Anand. He was the retired Chief Justice of India and the then chairperson of NHRC. I was handed over the papers to say, you have to file this, and this is a case where closure has taken place. Read the papers and see, we have to proceed further. So later I'm told a lawyer introduced me to him. He thought that this is a lawyer who can do the job. In 5.5 years, you don't claim much in the professional life, so to say, oh, I was noticed, recognized, and etc., etc. But then the journey began from there. We filed the writ petition. I was little, you know, reserved about the fact, should we file a writ petition against a closure in Supreme Court directly. The judgments were little different than a legal position. But when we discussed with Justice Anand, he said, no, this is a case. If you go to High Court, come here. By the time, so much of the water would flow. Better reach Supreme Court directly. That was his advice as an NHRC chairperson. We filed the writ petition. Yes, that was a conscious decision to file it in the name of Bilkis Bhanu in place of NHRC. We could have done that way also, but we thought it appropriate that she should be the name and the face to take up her fight. So Supreme Court, as I always say, had never disappointed Bilkis whenever she came here. So they took up the matter, they entertained the matter, and that time the additional Solicitor General who was appearing for the state of Gujarat, Mr. Mukul Rohtgi, even he conceded that this is a matter, let it be transferred to, the investigation be transferred to CBI. It was transferred to CBI, and CBI did a fabulous job. We came here against a closure order, which is something like that. The Gujarat police filed a closure report saying that there are discrepancies in the version, and secondly, the names have not been given of the accused, so maybe the story is true, but we cannot trace out the accused. And for this reason, the closure was first filed. The circle magistrate initially said, proceed further. In place of admitting the closure report, they said, file afresh, work harder. But then they submitted the closure report for the second time. The magistrate accepted the report. The case was closed. The law is that for a closure to be accepted, you should call upon the complainant. And if the complainant's version is taken and then you have to proceed further with the closure, you may. But in this case, she wasn't given any notice. She had never been entertained in this way. She has never been recognized for this matter, unfortunately, in the process. So closure filed, Supreme Court entertained, the investigation was reopened, and CBI actually turned the things around completely. One of the very, very good investigation and a charge sheet. And so we began from there.
So moving on to the more recent order of the Supreme Court, where I think the fundamental question before the court to determine was which government had the power to grant remission,
which is the appropriate government under the
CRPC to grant remission. And I think if one reads the law, it's very clear that wherever the trial has taken place, the government of that state has the authority to decide on remission. And remission is not to be considered as a matter of right, but one can only ask for it. And why did it then? I think the Radhesham Tiwari, the 2022 order of the Supreme Court.
Radhesham Shah.
That's the order where the Supreme Court had said that the government of Gujarat had the authority to decide on remission, and that was the appropriate government under CRPC which could decide on remission. Why did this happen? Because I think that's the only way the 1992
so
Gujarat policy.
So the question is tough. He said why, and we don't know why. Actually, we asked the same thing, why?
Because that's the only way. Yeah, but because
we asked the same thing, why? When the law is clear, the section is clear. Section 432 CRPC very clearly says which would be the appropriate government. The state, court of which has given the conviction, government of that state would be the appropriate government, and that's this clear in the section. There was no ambiguity. Then the judgments, not one, two, but four judgments, including a 5-judge bench judgment, which clearly says, this is the section says, we reiterate, no ambiguity, the appropriate government would be that government only of the state of which court has granted the conviction. So we also asked the same question, why? And this court, now in the recent judgment, said that was a wrong opinion. Why court... In that judgment, they had a reason to say, since the crime has taken place in Gujarat, so what in particular circumstances the trial was transferred from Gujarat to Maharashtra, but since the place of crime was Gujarat, in our wisdom, the government of the state of Gujarat would be the appropriate government. Our reading was clear that this is a wrong interpretation, not supported by provision of law, not supported by the judgment which interpreted the provision of law. And that's why we filed the review petition. We said everything, we relied upon the judgment, but again, why? Because court again said, these judgments, yes, we have seen you're relying upon, but not applicable to your case. And so review dismissed, but yes, fortunately now in this judgment, they have corrected everything.
So that was the only reason.
The place of crime. If you simplify the things, for that court, 13th May 2022 order, that was the only reason. The place of crime was Gujarat.
And that seems to have no mention in the CRPC as regards the place of crime needs to be
considered. That's foreign to that section.
And I think that's the only way that the convicts could actually benefit from remission was the Gujarat's 1992 policy. Because I think the latest Government of India's policy 2014 does not entitle convicts in cases of rape to avail remission.
No, but to correct you, even 1992 policy, if you apply a point blank policy, it could not have benefited them. Unless a government decides that I have to read the black and white of the policy, dehorse the application of law, dehorse the judgments, dehorse the mandate of the judgment which says don't mechanically apply the policy and apply these factors. So even that 1.5 page policy of Gujarat government would not have helped them coming out unless the authorities, the officers deciding says, we are not applying anything. Or if I say, they say, we are not applying our brains. I would dare say this, that when you decide not to apply law, when you decide not to apply factors, when you decide not to apply the gross factors of the case, then only you would say, we can let them come out. I always give a very simple example. Remission is what? A policy which says, though your sentence was LI or whatever number of years. But given the facts of your good conduct and other factors to be applied, we now want to consider a mercy on you to come out because you do not seem to be any more a danger to the society or threat to the society. This should be the consideration. If these factors, so when we see the remission orders, there's nothing of the sort. I understand somebody saying, even by applying wrongly the factors, say we have arrived to this conclusion. There was no such conclusion, so to say, they are not threat to the society anymore. That's one. Two, assume for a moment that was a case of 14 murders, simple gunshot murder. Can you as a society allow these criminals to come out and live with you? I got angry today. I got, you know, I have anger issues. I just took out my gun and shot 14 people down. No communal hatred. No bloodthirsty, you know, the way they were following these person, all of them. Still, can your law allow these criminals to come out and live with you? No. The answer should be no. If a simple, cold-blooded 14 people murder cannot allow these culprits or the convict to come out, how come in a case of this nature, any government can allow them to come out? That was, you know, a very simple question. I always say in Wilkes's case, if you have to argue the matter on remission to say they are not entitled to, this is enough to say they murdered 14 persons. Even if I don't add, they gang raped a pregnant woman, they gang raped two more women and killed them, they killed 14 persons in total, they killed 8 minors in them. Even if I don't add all this, a simple one line should be enough. But here, like, communal hatred, innocent people killed, they were chased, and then all that.
So, as you said, it's also important to consider the gravity of the offense, and when you are considering applications of remission. But even the affidavit that the Gujarat government filed, it had indicated how opinion of the CBI judge, and I think the CBI, the SP, who's the investigating the case, was against it. They were not advising release and remission of these convicts. And even though the law does not mandate, that does not bind the government to follow the recommendations of the CBI judge or the SP, it does set a very wrong precedent going forward also, even if we are to consider remissions for other applications.
No, listen. So law says the opinion given by, so the requirement of law is all the policies, Jain manuals, the policies, the state government's frame, and interpretation of section 432. If you put everything together, it says there has to be a jail committee, advisory committee. So there, in some states it could be 10, in some states it could be 8, the combination may be vary, there could be MLAs, there could be other persons, but then you have a combo. The requisition, when it is formed, has to be sent to whom? To the convicting court. The presiding judge who passed the conviction order might change. In most of the cases would change. To the investigating agency, to the local magistrate, to the local SP, right? To the sessions judge, and that advisory board of whatever number it is. In this case, there were 10. Now here, interestingly, the convicting court said no, the CBI said no, the SP said no, the district magistrate said no, the sessions judge said no, the additional director jail said no. So none of the authorities in the first go said yes. So much so that they said, It would create a law and order situation that there might be threat to the peace of the victim or the witnesses. It is only after, the Supreme Court judgment of 13th May, when the court said Radhesham's case, one of the convicts' case, that directing the state of Gujarat to consider his application, decide within 2 months, suddenly everything is speeded up. Now when the opinion came, then everybody said yes, except certainly CBI, and they did not ask the opinion again. Interesting point is, when the remission order was passed or the state of Gujarat recommended or forwarded their recommendation to the central government for approval, there was not a whisper about why, despite a no by the convicting court, why, despite a no by the investigating agency, we still consider this a good case for grant of remission. Now, that itself make the whole case bad. Now, when Naveed was saying, when Naveed was saying that no mandate, the opinion of the presiding judge, the constitution bench judgment in V. Srinivasan said, it has to be a binding effect in terms of consideration. So it's not as if the authorities have to say no. Now, since the convicting court has said that they should not be granted, then they cannot have a different opinion. I'm not saying that. But it has a binding force in terms of for the purpose of consideration. Yes. They failed in that mandate also. That the consideration was missing. Yes. The consideration was missing, interestingly, to what extent? In all such cases, as per the jail manual and the requirement of the policy for remission, the jail authorities would have to prepare a fact sheet, right? Case sheet. They can have a different nomenclature, where you have to mention the age, the number of years undergone, the paros, the furlough, whether fine paid or not, everything, and the crime. Here, while they have narrated the crime, they have not mentioned a pregnant woman was gang raped. They have not mentioned that there were two more women were gang raped and killed. They did not mention that there were 8 minors who were killed. They did not even mention that it is a case of 14 murders. So it was a very basic narration in a para which says multiple murders, mass murders, rapes, and that's it. So you have not actually given the actual facts for consideration even to that committee. So the committee was not benefited by the actual grossness or the facts or the crime which was committed. Though, yes, other things were mentioned, but this was missing, and then the consideration certainly was missing. That was like absolute silence over the consideration.
It's absolutely clear from the affidavit also. There was no conclusion one can draw with regards to good behavior from the affidavit that the Gujarat government filed. And absence of cases filed and all of that cannot necessarily translate into a blanket finding for all 11 convicts that they were entitled.
They turned saints. And assume they did. Still, after committing this nature of crime, can we as a society allow them to come out? You know, my question had always been very simple. Can the society have them to live together? Can you allow such kind of convict to live next to you?
What did the court mention in the
judgment? We are sitting, so you can also continue to sit.
What did the court mention in the judgment? Why they are being released?
So the order was passed by the government.
Government or the court?
No. The court did not pass any order to release.
Okay.
Court only directed the government that, according to us, the state of Gujarat is the appropriate government. So we direct the state of Gujarat to consider their applications within a period of 2 months. That means they could deny also. So ball then came to the state of Gujarat's court, and the remission was granted by them, approved by central government. Court hasn't granted the remission.
Can I speak or you are completed?
I have completed.
I want to say that this particular incident is alleged, it took place in the riots in Gujarat after the train was burnt in Godhra. And first the quarrel took place in Godhra, and in retaliation against those who burnt and killed 60 persons who were coming from Ram Janambhumi,
So this triggered. Earlier there was peace in the platform also. So these Mandir Masjid issue should be solved so that they may not result into quarrel and then riots, then such crimes. So that should also be focused. Matlab, it was a series when it took place.
What are we doing? I thought we are discussing
Bilkis's case. I am talking about the ground that it should not take place in future.
I don't know politics.
Whatever I wanted to say, I have said. Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned that the point on how paroles and furloughs were also granted to a lot of these convicts. And again, the Gujarat government's affidavit clearly indicates that many of these convicts were out of the jail for over 1,000 days. I think one of them was out for 1,500 days out of the served sentence.
They were magnanimous in granting them parole.
That also really impacts the victim's sense of justice. When someone is sentenced to a life term, and just to clarify, life terms continues to imply the remainder of a person's natural life. And even then, a person continues to stay outside of prison for years. You cumulatively see over 1,000 days. It's at least 3-4 years that many of these convicts were out for.
Yeah, in fact, we noticed when we were seeing these fact sheets that once they are 14 years, even before completing the 14th year, they had this liberty, like luxury to come out very often. But after completing the period of 14 years, which as per the policy was minimum, the frequency increased of coming out on either parole or furlough. And then they continued to be there for a good number of periods. Like in some, I was just noticing that or reading that, I realized in some cases, it was like for 4 months they were out, one of the convict or some of the convict. Then they would be in for 15 days, and then again out for some 1 or 2 months, then again in for a few days, then again out. So like, that is court also noticed that this was a very, very liberal approach to them, which is not normally seen. It's not as if quite often you see parole and furlough are being granted with this, in this liberal manner, which they had the benefit of.
That's what I say. It really impacts how the victim is also responding to the acts of the state, where they are able to, where they allow such convicts to come out of prison so often, and as you said, in violation of the rules on parole also.
Yeah, so it looks like as if you are keeping, unfortunately, unconsciously, maybe or consciously, the victim at tender hooks.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't know. It's not one convict. You have 11. And anyone would come. So it was at least one of them is there, existing all the time. One or the other. So for the victim, just imagine the situation that your convicts are there.
Yeah.
Either of them.
Yes, please. We can. I think we can now open up the floor for questions.
We live in the era of cyber terrorism, which is known as ethical hacking now. This was a straight confirmed murders that you mentioned, inhuman crime, totally human rights violation. I'm an international legal facilitator and I'm fighting for my life with the government and with multiple courts. I've gone through as an experiential victim beyond human imagination. With all due respect, my name is Saurabh Somani. I come from Rajasthan. I've gone to multiple states, I've gone to multiple CBI divisions, I've written to the heads of Indian security, the heads of the country, and countless attempts to meet the media and whomsoever. Not even an FIR is registered when I am going through a crime that is undefined, unexplainable, so meticulously planned that we can't imagine, because criminal espionage leads to criminal rumor that leads to criminal execution. And these are the lifeline of present modern day, criminal retarding crime. So rather I call it as a criminal retarding pleasure people have derived since COVID time. And with such level of perfection, we are unable to find the officer who has a will to go and find out or nab such culprits. As from top to bottom, people are involved. And slowly and gradually, they all have been multiplied in states and cross borders. Can you believe someone has come all the way to a foreign country to ensure you cannot become a man to perform with a woman of your choice? That is how is the level of attack. So this is just an example I am giving you. Knowingly, people who are responsible to stop this, they are part of it. But they cannot do anything because you have to prove everything. And when there are facts available, easily it has been wiped out. I have taken international court into consideration asking for life security, life and liberty. I have gone until United Nations, office after office. I know the kind of humiliation and trauma I am going through. Now, living in hotels past 1 year, now living in debt at some point, despite when I am a prime minister invitee of a foreign country. This is the level of suffering. Can you imagine? So, cyber analysis, cyber terrorism, the acceptance towards ethical hacking. I mean, nowhere in the world this is defined that you can hack someone, but ethically.
Sir, let's concentrate this right now for one case.
Thank you for listening. Just wanted to bring the impact of cyber analysis, which was not available back then.
Yeah. Thank you for that. We can perhaps limit the questions to the current topic of discussion. Yeah, we have a question here.
No, I had grave objections to what the gentleman said about, tracing a rationale or reasons for Bilkis's rape. I mean, how can you justify such things? No. That is the responsibility of the government and not of councils. I'm sorry.
I think we can avoid an interaction.
There is a grave objection to what you have done in terms of Bilkis Banu didn't commit that,
excuse me, sir,
that crime. Okay? Yeah. But please don't bring such explanations.
We can perhaps, please don't bring perhaps such continue the discussion and...
But please don't bring in such explanations to forums like this.
We can discuss the judgment right now. And
I'm not the organizer.
Let us please focus on the issue at hand here. We have a question here, please.
You should ask your question.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, please. Thank you. We have a question here. Maybe we can have a mic passed on.
Hi, thank you. My name is Apurva Mandhani. I work with The Print. Hi. So in the judgment that set aside the remission order, the Supreme Court also said that the May 2022 judgment was obtained by fraud, that certain documents were not revealed to the court. I just wanted to understand how that happened. How did those documents, and those were crucial, of course, for the court to probably determine who should be granting remission or how it should be granted. How did that lapse occur? And how did those documents escape the court?
See, so for the purpose of, for documents to be submitted, court is not somebody who would go and find out the documents. Documents have to be placed by us, either of the parties. In this case, the one convict who came to Supreme Court in a writ petition, he did not place all the documents, which I was just talking a while before, that his application, he actually approached the Bombay High Court. Bombay High Court then said, no, for you, the appropriate government is not us. Sorry, he approached Gujarat High Court. Gujarat High Court said, no, this is not the appropriate government. For you, the appropriate government would be the Maharashtra. And so the appropriate court would be the Bombay High Court. He, pursuant to that order, actually approached the Maharashtra government within no time. So, order was of 17th of July 2019, and on 1st of August 2019, he actually filed an application before the state of Maharashtra. He did not disclose, and then the application proceeded further. All the authorities as I just told you a while before, that everybody said no for his remission. When he came to Supreme Court in a writ petition, so first thing is, a writ petition under Article 32 is not maintainable when you are challenging a judicial order. So he did not, as a matter of fact, challenge the judicial order, but he had a judicial order which by the time attained finality. And if you have a judicial order against you, either you follow it or challenge it. He did not. He followed it. So he had to tell Supreme Court that I have actually acted upon this order, which asked me to go to Maharashtra. I did go to Maharashtra. Then the question ends, because his plea was that, see, both the courts are asking us to go from one court to one place to another place. Where do we go? That was again a wrong statement. then all these negative opinions he did not place on record. So that was a fraud plate. Court said two things. Fraud played upon the court, that's why the judgment is nullity. And two, the order was per inquirium to law and the settled position of law. Law in terms of the section and settled position of law, the interpretation by the courts. So in on the both accounts, then the order was declared nullity.
We have a question there.
Thank you so much. It is good to discuss what happens in the court, and we are discussing as common citizens. There are two, three things that came to my mind while listening to this case. First of all, when we talk about the barbaric act that had been done and the way facts had been manipulated, how, and we know that this happened in 2002, 2003, and now it's more than 20 years. So in a situation like this, do we really think that the, you know, the so-called justice, quote unquote, is the real justice that we are giving to the victims who have been, I don't know how much pain or mental suffering the women must have suffered. And there are many cases which do not come out because even in some cases, FIRs are not properly lodged by those who are responsible, those who are in the authority, or those who are in power. So although I see this as a ray of hope that perhaps we are, you know, not everything is dark, but how are we going to ensure that there will be more light than this
keep
unseemly
fighting,
darkness?
Keep fighting. That's the only hope. Keep fighting against the injustice. And don't let the proceedings delayed like it happens in most of the cases or sometimes, or it happened in this case. Keep fighting. Keep pressing the panic button. Keep approaching the court again and again. Courts are heavily overworked. But still, justice is justice.
And I think
I understand what you are saying, but like sitting this side, we can't help unless, you know, something is done with the system. But keep fighting. Unless that is being done, we have to keep fighting for the justice and people like you around and, as I say, the heroes sitting here around. The justice would actually prevail.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we should also constantly engage with as citizens of this country, because the decision of the trial court was not the end of the journey for Bilkis and, of course, for the convicts. Matters went to the High Court, the Supreme Court. The compensation granted by the Supreme Court was, again, not the end of the journey for Bilkis.
Tireless journey. So if you see the efforts for, you know, you can name me as a person. I was there. I was appearing in court only in Supreme Court. I was not doing in trial court. I was not doing in High Court. There were different set of lawyers over there. But two features were constant. Bilkis and the support system around her. So the big round of applause should go to the support system around her, who did the hand-holding. You can turn around and do the clapping also, because so I played a very, very, you know, minuscule role in the whole journey. The bravest, the biggest role was by the social workers who were around her and did the hand holding and took her from there till now, till date, and the hand holding continues.
We have a question.
Hello, ma'am. My name is Surbhi. I'm from the Vidhi Center for Legal Policy. So I had two brief questions. The first is a shorter one. I was curious what the conversation was like with Ms. Bano when you discussed that she shouldn't retain anonymity during the trial, since obviously that did open her up to like vulnerabilities and security issues as well, right? So was that a conversation to begin with,
not
or
with
was that
me.
Something she was open
no,
to?
Not with me.
Okay.
The people around her.
Right.
And I don't know whether the conversation took place or not, but yes, anonymity was not maintained.
Right.
And I'm glad it wasn't maintained.
Right. Yeah, no, it was very brave of her to come out in the first place. And ma'am, the second question...
I just remember when after this remission order.
Right.
And when all, like, each one of us so disturbed at that point of time, One of the legal journalists asked me that should we shadow her face or should we conceal the name, because yeah. in last two, three years we have many judgments which right. have actually highlighted the aspect that the anonymity has to be maintained.
Yeah.
Then section 228A. So I said now the fight has become synonym with the name and the face. You conceal the face, you conceal the name, and it goes into oblivion then. Oblivion. So it's been there. It's been all over.
Absolutely.
In all these years.
Yeah.
So you may continue.
For sure.
According to me, like that was good. That was no harm in having that. And we had that. Like we have all along. Now Bilkis's name has become synonym of a big, huge fight.
Absolutely.
I call her, synonym of takat, himmat.
Yeah, and she's persevered for two
personified,
decades.
Himmat personified.
For sure. And ma'am, the second question was about the Supreme Court judgment itself. So the final judgment did remark that the state of Gujarat itself was complicit because it didn't file a review petition against the May 22 order. Right? So do you think this creates some sort of a soft burden on the parties themselves to file a review petition if there is an error in the order?
Which party?
Against the party, because the order was in their favor, and they held that the state of Gujarat itself was complicit for not filing a review petition against the order, against the error in the order.
So
right?
I didn't get the question. I'm so sorry. You said the observation is complicit and in tandem with the convicts.
Right. No. So do you think this kind of induces some sort of precedent of a soft burden on the party in whose favor the order is held to file some sort of a review petition against an error?
So party, when you say, you mean to say the convicts?
I mean to say the state government itself, because they held that the state
they
government
have filed.
I
meant against the error.
Now. The review has
they
been filed now against.
They have right. filed now, the review is there. Which review?
That is,
I meant against the May 22 order.
That's the observation against them.
Right.
See, I'm sorry, I didn't get your question before correctly.
Right.
So, when 13th May order came,
yeah.
before that, in Radhesham's petition, state of Gujarat was issued notice.
Yeah.
They did not file a black and white reply,
right.
but in oral reply, during course of argument, they did take an objection that state of Gujarat is not the appropriate government.
Right.
As per the case of V. Sriharan,
yeah.
the and other judgments, they actually cited V. Sriharan, so to say that the appropriate government would be state of Maharashtra and we are not the appropriate government.
Yeah.
Meaning thereby that one, state is supposed to know the law correctly.
Right.
They did actually know the law correctly.
Right.
Okay. So that's why Supreme Court in this judgment said that when you were there, you have taken this as this objection precisely. If the court has not accepted your objection,
right.
you should have filed a review petition.
Understood.
And that was our precise objection too in our review petition as well as writ petition. That it was the burden actually lied upon the state of Gujarat to file a review petition against 13th May order.
May
so 24. To say
yeah.
that your view that state of Gujarat is an appropriate government is not correct, possibly because of the correct, with the correct reading of the section
right.
and the law.
Otherwise it implies complicity. Makes sense, ma'am. Thank you.
We have a question here.
Yeah, hi, hello. Thank you very much for doing this, and kudos to you and to the Supreme Court and the entire support system that Bilkis had for making this possible for society to see, though after a very, very long time. I don't have a legal background, so my question is not related to the law of the case. I just wanted to know that in this entire order, since you said that there were frequent and extended paroles, etc., in the first period of incarceration, is there any observation that or direction that similar extended and frequent leaves from jail will not be granted to the convicts again? Because as you said, it creates fear in society, and definitely to the victim. And second thing, you said that the committee was not correctly advised. The fact sheet was a very shell of a sheet and did not have all the facts, including of the gang rapes and the murders. So Is there any, I mean, there was, of course, that Gujarat government is complicit, the Supreme Court said. But is there any further direction to the government to fix responsibility on these people who apparently willfully gave a sketchy report to for such a major consideration? So those are two questions. Thank you.
The observation is there, which indicts the Gujarat government in terms of saying the state was complicit and in tandem. Now possibly the burden lies upon, the responsibility is upon the state to take action against those erring officials or everybody and anybody who was actually complicit in doing that. So nobody stops them. Yes, there is no specific direction, but I assume in, if a matter of this comes, nature of this nature, the observation of this nature comes, the government should act upon. And who knows, they would be acting upon.
No. But the government is challenging that observation, complicity altogether. Which means, giving its officials over...
No, but they are not challenging the entire judgment.
Not the judgment.
They have only that observation. So you assume for a moment, for the sake of discussion only, that one line is taken out from the judgment. The observations are in detail, the discussions are in detail. Right?
And the business of frequent and extended for the
So they said, see something from coming down from the Supreme Court saying they are for laws and per laws, they were very liberal approach and they were granted liberally. This is good enough. And for them to really act upon, but now the it's not anymore for the government. No, but still they are in Gujarat jails only, yes. They might. Let's see how this things go further. As of now, one has got 5 days parole, and another application I'm assume is still pending. So let's see how it goes further. They would be cognizant of, the courts would be cognizant of the observation by court, Supreme Court, and the government should also be. As all of us as a society are sitting here, let's go and challenge that parole and follow if they are being granted.
Yeah, in continuation to this madam question, this action is taken only official from police, jail or in judiciary also, judges also?
No, I didn't get that.
The way madam is talking about the, you said observations there, this observation is for this only officials from lower courts,
so
police.
So it was nobody's case. The courts are are complicit and in tandem. Actually, that was nobody's case. None of us argued that also. And as far as that order is concerned, the court's opinion was that it was obtained by a fraud by not informing the court all the correct facts. And secondly, that the correct legal position was also not brought to court.
The action cannot be taken, judges also.
No, there is no such observation. And how do you take action against judges?
As they're also pointed out, there is no such direction to take action against those who had...
There is no observation to the courts or the judges. So for judges, it's only for high court judges, it's only impeachment. There's no, you have nothing to, in terms of, you know, investigation and other things. For judgments to go wrong, you don't... Take action against the judges.
Motivated judgment.
I think he's referring to the decisions on paroles when they were taking, decisions on remission when they were taking.
Most of the times these paroles and furloughs are by the government, by the jail authorities only. We don't have that record that whether all these paroles, they are, like we actually had a research when we were searching through the websites of the courts, both Bombay High Court and Gujarat High Court. There are very few orders of parole or furlough. Most of the parole and furlough seems to be given only by the authorities. The matter did not go all each time to the court.
Manu Sharma, court was involved in parole of Manu Sharma.
I'm not aware of like that detailed facts of the Manu Sharma's case.
Any other question we have? We have a question here and we can perhaps end with this.
Thank you, ma'am. I'm Advocate Suvarna Jain from Pune. As ma'am said, pointed out about furlough and paroles frequent to this convicts. So same thing I want to ask is to fix this, like we know the law, we have remedies in law, but to make it preventive so that such direction should be given. Otherwise, this may continue to some other state also. In future, it may happen. But such directions, if they are given, that such frequent paroles and furloughs.
These would always be, you know, based on facts of the case. The reason for that parole or furlough to be asked for. In this, it would have been possibly difficult to go back to examine all the parole and furloughs granted. So an observation came that they were dealt with liberally.
So it was a general...
But that was not a general. It was sufficient for the case. When you are showing all those details and the days or number of days of parole and furlough, and an observation coming from Supreme Court is always, we consider it something, you know, very important when an observation comes from the highest court of the country, even yes. for parole and furlough. But today, and you know, that was not also subject matter. The subject matter was much bigger for yes. us to deal with the remission
right.
than getting into each and every single nicety. I'm very grateful that the court has actually taken cognizance of every single argument and the objection taken. And that's why we say it's a detailed judgment, landmark judgment. Court had done a great job. We all did our part, but then the, you know, the ball was in their court. You know, the last
final authority.
Ball was with them. So they had to bat on it, and they bat so beautifully.
Thank you.
So I think we can close with this. I think it's been a wonderful session. And lots of food for thought for us also, and particularly as a legal researcher for me, because when we also engage with ideas of reform, rehabilitation, and then put that in a context such as this, it becomes a big challenge for us. And we would all want to engage with thoughts of parole and furloughs being used for helping a convict reintegrate with society. But the challenge that cases like these throw are something that we should all really engage with. And thank you very much for joining us. And thank you, Ms. Gupta, for joining us. There's a small
Thanks.
Token of appreciation here.
Thank you.
Thank you all for joining us, and we'll close with this. Thanks to our sign language interpreters also. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope to see you for future our upcoming cases, great cases discussions, and hope to have all of you back here. Thank you.
Thanks, Nadia.
Thank you. It was wonderful having you.